some answers from the AG. This section would have to end, or the session would have to end at 13:30 for us to get 30 minutes lunch break. And then we will have the NHLS at 2 o'clock. So the members who have raised their hands, the Honorable Ismail, Clark, Wilson, Munyai, Mahlengwa, Chirwa, Gela. Any others?
From Staren, please, Chairperson.
And somebody said they will write their questions in writing to on the system or to me. I'm trying to see who that was. Just give me a short moment. Let me have a look who that was. Honorable Clark, send my question to writing. Okay, that probably refers to the questions earlier to the FFC. In that order, honorable members, I am going to repeat. It's Ismail, Clark, Wilson, Munyai, Mahlengwa, Chirwa, Gela, and Van Staden. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to the presenters and good afternoon to everybody. I would just like to say first, thank you for the very thorough an informative presentation, very enlightening and very concerning as well. I just have a few questions. I'll bring it down to four. Chair, I'm sure you'll be happy with that. My first question, compliances and monitoring systems seem to be a continuing challenge in this department. How do you foresee the quality of compliance under the proposed NHI? And how do you foresee the implementation of the NHI with the current issues the department is facing in this regard? What would the AJSA actually recommend to the department in this regard as well? Secondly, what's your view on the fact that the state of the economy has changed tremendously since the introduction of the NHI? What would be the AJSA recommendation? Would it be that a more updated financial feasibility study must be taken with regard to the NHI? My third question, what's the AG's view on the fact that less budget is provided for the appointment of doctors, theatre nurses, etc.? I know you've mentioned it in the presentation. Now, what would be your recommendation to the department to address this core issue is without sufficient healthcare workers, there is no constructive healthcare in the country. And with regard in the same vein to service providers not being paid on time and thus having a major negative impact on the quality of healthcare services provided by health, public healthcare facilities. Examples are medical waste not picked up on time, linen not washed on time, diesel not supplied on time, and we know with load shedding, it's basically a crisis. What would be your recommendation to the department in this regard? And what's your view on how this will further play out under the NHI, considering that the NHI is a centralized system? And in the same vein, with regard to the IT issues raised in your report and the EVDA system, we know that a centralized registration system is required by the NHI. Now, how does the AG actually view this and how this will actually impact the implementation of the NHI going forward? So you can see my questions are related, I'm basically asking how is the NHI going to work? And I'm asking for the AG's view on this and the recommendation from the AG with regard to the NHI going forward. My last question, we have had many reports of whistleblowers being discriminated and penalized. Now, looking at Rahima Musa, the Dr. Tamayor issue, we're looking at the Tembisa Hospital issue. What is your view on this and what would be your recommendation to the department in this regard? I have hundreds of other questions, but I will then take that to the, different entities. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Clark.
Oh, I can. Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding the three-year contract to develop the medical legal case management system, I'm very curious to know why the system only was used by one province and who was responsible for the haphazard implementation of this project. Why was no feasibility study done around this? How does the department intend to address this issue? Is there still intention to implement it in the remaining four provinces? And how will the department ensure that it's being used as intended when such measures have not been used to date? In terms of the information systems that are not implemented are part of the contributing factors for medical claims, and many hospitals have no internet or computers, so record keeping is bad. And we have seen the critical role of record keeping, the critical role that record keeping plays within medical legal claims, as well as shortage of staff that work under enormous amount of pressure. And the department must tell us how they are going to deal with that. The past 5 years, how many projects with external service providers have been undertaken? How many of these followed the correct legislative and PFMA obligations? And how many were successfully implemented without irregular or wasteful and fruitless expenditure? In case of such expenditure, were the money recouped? Was the contractual timeframes adhered to? Did these projects incur penalties? And, the question remains whether contractors are actually being vetted before appointed. If contractors do not comply to their contractual obligations and results to fruitful and wasteful expenditure, are these contractors then blacklisted? And why does the department not ensure that consequence management actually takes place? Chair, I think this committee needs to do vigorous oversight over contractual delinquents. And that should be one of our recommendations coming out of this meeting today. I also would like to know how many DBS staff involved with irregular and wasteful and fruitless expenditure, and have disciplinary measures been put in the past year, and what did it entail? Also, how was the reprioritization of 745 million spent on addressing the funding shortfall of medical internships and community services posts in the provinces? Why is such pervasive and persisting problem, and how will the department ensure it doesn't carry forward to 2023? The AG also mentioned that the department's lack of consequence management, given South Africa's massive problem with corruption and capture, why has the department not ensured proper consequence management? And then, Chair, also, will the department consider ring fencing funds to protect whistleblowers and combat corruption? 1.3 billion rand was irregularly expended, and most of this has to do with non-compliance with procurement procedures. I mean, how does the department hold these entities and individuals responsible to account? I'd also like to know, how many criminal charges relating corruption and fraud has the department opened? And Chair, why did we not gazette the set policy in terms of medical legal claims, and when will this be done? Because case management, record keeping, and improving staffing skills and adequate appointments has now become critical in terms of, in terms of the health sector. Also would like to know what the budget for e-health systems are and what is being done by the department to ensure that these systems are implemented. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually not sure if I should laugh or cry. Laugh because we could have told you exactly what this AG's report was going to say, because we actually do oversights ourselves. I spend most of my days in an oversight at one facility or another, and I could have told you exactly what this report was going to say, because it's very, very obvious on the ground what the very severe backward trend health has taken, particularly in its facilities. Or whether I should cry, because this is actually so depressing that it's actually, we're the portfolio of health, and we get a presentation that actually makes us sick. It's very, very depressing. And the fact that the minister is not here for this presentation is deeply disturbing for me, because at the end of the day, he is the accounting officer. He is overall accountable for this, him and the DG, and they are not present in this meeting. And it's damning. And they should be listening to what we have to say. The fact that they are not here is absolutely appalling. And I think what's very, very obvious in this report, and I don't know how many times this report said it, is that there are absolutely no controls anywhere except potentially the Western Cape. Every material finding or problem all boiled down to no controls. And I think we must remember that all an audit does is trace the money and the implementation and the record keeping. And it's all very well to say, oh, whoopee-doo, some people got, you know, unqualified audits or had no findings or what have you. That means nothing when the department, and I'm going to highlight the NDOH here itself, is only achieving 62% of its targets. In fact, the provinces are not meeting their targets. The entities are not meeting their targets. Quite frankly, this whole department is so, so deep in the sewage, but I'm not sure how we're going to get out of it. I don't know how many times in this report I read, and particularly when it comes to finances, no financial management controls, no prevention of irregular or wasted expenditure. I mean, $1.3 billion. That could have built hospitals. It could have built clinics. It could have improved the health system. Instead of which we've blown it and we've gone backwards. It's not acceptable. I lost count how many times in this presentation the words effective, lack of effective and appropriate steps, I mean effective and appropriate steps were not taken to address this. When your regular expenditure goes up 42%, in a year, you've got to know that there is something seriously, seriously amiss. And what is amiss? Who are managing these departments? Where is the expertise? Who's managing the health facilities? Who's managing our finances? Because if you read this report, whoever is, has not got a cooking clue and they shouldn't be there in the first place. It's the same with the infrastructure collapse. All of these projects that are not taken off. No costing, no time, no project control, nothing. So who are we putting in charge of these things? Obviously not experts, because that's very clear they don't have a cooking clue what they do. And who are the contractors? And are we contracting people who are not qualified, who are then subcontracted to people who might have a bit of a qualification? We are in serious trouble. 125 billion rand on medical claims. I mean, it exceeds the year's budget. It exceeds the year's budget. Where is this money going to come from? And I would really like the auditors to please tell me that we've put 93.8 million into the medico-legal project. What is this project? Okay. Where's that money coming from and what is it supposed to do? Because 93.8 million is a long way away from 125 billion that we owe. So it's going to go nowhere. But the fact remains is it's coming out of somebody's coffers. And because it's coming out of health budgets, we are not providing services. We cannot. There's no money to do it. It is little wonder that health is such a mess and that people are dying and that you've got medico-legal claims. And the more money you put into those kind of facilities, those kinds of projects, the more medico-legal claims you have to pay, the worse your health systems become, the worse the poor and vulnerable suffer because they just cannot get decent health care. And that is in contravention of Section 27 and Section 9 of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We're actually going against our own Constitution and our own Bill of Rights. I'd love to know who the four service providers are who are dealing with the medico-legal claims and exactly what they are being paid. But your medico-legal claims, number one, are lack of infrastructure that we can't even get that right. We can't even get those projects right. They're not even happening. We've got CADA deployment, and I will use that word, and I will use it again and again because I have gone to hospitals just in the very last couple of weeks, where I found CEOs of hospitals or clinical managers of hospitals who've had cases against them in other hospitals And instead of being fired for incompetence and mismanagement, all they've done is deploy them to another hospital. And what happened? The medical legal claims in that hospital shot through the roof. Why? Because they are incompetent. They have no idea what they are doing. I'm sorry, it's just, it's overwhelming. It's absolutely overwhelming. In your material findings, payment for services or goods not yet received. Really? How? Why are we paying for things we haven't got yet? And it's not once, it's several times. Procurement, non-compliant procurement resulting in the overpricing of goods. Well, that stuck out like a sore thumb in recent reports and the Hawks and various other reports. But again, why is it happening? This report, after we finish this meeting, will go with the comments from this portfolio committee back to Parliament, and this report will have to be signed off. I don't know why we are bothering. I am the longest serving member on this committee as it stands right now. Year on year on year on year, we've complained and put exactly the same things in the report. All the recommendations, every year the recommendations is the same. Nothing gets done about it year on year on year. And where do we sit now? So deep in the doo-doo, we don't know which way to turn. Because nobody takes this report seriously. Nobody is held accountable. Nothing is done about it. And while all the while that goes on, the poor people in the poor areas, particularly the poor and vulnerable in the poorer rural areas who rely on public health facilities, get nothing. Nothing. No proper health care. We've got a backlog of surgeries that blows one's mind. People who was in pain, going blind, got cancer, who are not getting treatment. Quite frankly, I'm absolutely disgusted. I am appalled at the situation. I'm sorry that the minister is not here. And quite frankly, unless somebody takes this report seriously, I want the minister and the provinces in this portfolio ASAP, please, so that we can go through their reports, see what the hell is going on in the provinces and find out from the minister what he's going to do about it, because he's in deep trouble. Thank you.
Member Wilson, thank you. I've now allowed you a lot of time again. Next time I'm going to cut you. You did the same this morning, but yes, I understand your emotions which you raise. Next is Honorable Munyai.
Thank you very much indeed for the opportunity. I must say, firstly, welcome the report that has been presented before us. One of the issues, Honorable Chair, about the National Department of Health possible finding, it didn't come as a surprise. Precisely because the Minister of Health, Dr. Joe Patla, came to Parliament together with the Deputy Minister, Zomo, came to Portfolio Committee and brief us on the areas of possible finding so far as the COVID-19 scheme. So, Honorable Chair, because I'm not an artist, I'm not going to play drama, political drama before this session, nor be engaging about my period of service before this portfolio committee. I'm going to raise issues on the progress that has been made. I think let's first and foremost welcome where there's a big progress, there's a progress. For instance, there are areas where entities would have made some progress. And there are areas where they are trying to improve. So without going to those details, but where, and I think we must encourage all of them to strengthen on internal controls, to make sure that we improve on our work. So where there's repeatedly ignorance of such a task, I'm sure we need to have consequence management. But overall, Chairperson, I'm very impressed. There are weaknesses that has been displaced. Of course, we must support the department and also all the entities to continue to improve on their work. On my part, Honorable Chair, and I think I'm very excited, there are areas where I'm concerned. And I think the issue that has been raised, issues of depending on consultant, that we should really reduce on that, because people that are imported, are appointed, they should have technical capacity to support the department. We can't be a department of consultant. So that will be my submission, Honorable Chair, and without waste of time, and welcome the report. Thank you. And lastly, Chair, I must really put this one forward. We are not in a public hearing of NHI. We are receiving the audit report. I think we should align ourselves to that. Thank you.
Maslengwa. Maslengwa, you are next. We'll come back to Maslengwa. I'll go to Honorable Chirwa. Chirwa, you are next. Is there a challenge with you hearing me, Honorable Members?
Yes, we can hear you, Dr. Jacobs.
Oh, thank you.
Honorable Dr. Jacobs, the chair of this committee.
Thank you very much. I will then go on to Honorable Gela.
Yes, Chair, thank you very much. Chair, let me also welcome the report from the AG. I'm almost covered by Honorable Munyai, Chair. I think he put it very clear that as portfolio committee, we were updated in terms of the challenges that the Department of Health is facing. Hence, there's this redress in this current financial year for them to receive a qualified opinion from the AG. Of course, we understand the issue of COVID-19. Nobody was expecting that, but eventually happened. But the other issue that I want to check with the AG, there were many issues that were raised in terms of financial compliance and also delay in terms of payment and also irregular expenditure. The issue of monitoring, it's something that is still lacking, but also performed or not compared by PMFA, other issues that the wasteful expenditure, Chair. But Chairperson, I think we need also to monitor and also to make follow-ups on the recommendations, and also how are we going to make sure that this department also address what is the concern of the AG. But so far, Chair, we welcome the report as it is, and we hope there'll be a more improvement in the next financial year. Of course, we know that it was not easy in the previous year. Some of the finances, they have to be diverted to COVID-19. But also, Chair, the issue of NHI, I want to conquer myself or align myself with Honorable Munyai that we are not here for the NHI. Of course, you know that it's part of the report, that it must be also indicated. But NHI, it's the only the way that other members, they must just make sure that they understand and swallow it, that it's a good move for us in terms of making sure in other issues that need to be addressed, especially on the health sector. I will pause the chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have three questions. I just want clarity. If the AG can help me, I'm sorry, you know, I'm between two meetings here, so perhaps he said it already and I couldn't hear it. I just want to know what was amount underspent by the department for 21-22. And then on the legal litigation and claims, yes, the amount of 125 billion is staggering high. It's almost a billion more than last year. And then it shows that there's significant problems in our public health sector, which needs to be addressed. My question, however, on these are the following. I just want to know, what are all of these litigations consisting of? And can the AG provide us with a full list of all the provinces' litigations? Not the one like on slide 20, a full comprehensive report. If the AG can supply us with something like that, otherwise we have to get it from the department. I just want to have the AG's answer on that. On my third clarity question is, on the infrastructure side, the AG reported about, if I quickly could count it from slide 24 up to slide 30, about five facilities, and surely there must be more as we receive complaints throughout the country from various state hospitals and provincial clinics and so forth. Can the AG just give some clarity on this matter also, please? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mahlengwa and Chirwa. Are you back?
I'm back, Chairperson Mahlengwa.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the presenters for the comprehensive report. I have a few seeking clarity questions. First one is about the target not achieved, because each year the target and a budget was there. What happened to the budget of those target not achieved? Second one, I'm worried about the document submitted without an evidence report, because when you submit anything, they should be accompanied with the evidence records. But this one, they submit without evidence record. That was very much worried me. The last one, they said the other provinces, they submit in an old-fashioned report. Who is the responsible to tackle them? What is needed this year? What or the lack of capacity or a negligent? If there are negligence, who's supposed to correct that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm having issues with connectivity here. Thank you to the AG for their presentation. I think we have come to appreciate the AG's presentation every year, because it highlights very important issues the committee is able to take on. And I think we can even relate to this, even the issue of digital rights that was brought to the fourth. I think in 2020 or early 2021. My first question to the AG is noting the decline of the NDOH. the recent findings of Tembisa Hospital multi-million corruption. From the AG, what are other similar issues that the committee must probe to unearth the imminent existence of corruption in the NDOH, our healthcare facilities, and in our entities? I think it's an important thing to look into in much detail and have recommendations on the part of the AG that are sent to the portfolio committee on how to go about this and strengthening our oversight work, right? Because it's also part and parcel of ensuring that some of these things are resolved, or in the very least, that they are exposed in the proper manner, in the proper way. And secondly, what does the AG recommend in response to non-compliance legislation? I'm asking this because there seems to be a lack of implementation of recommendations of the AG. And also in relation to that, how does then the AG go about in defending its recommendations? Is there, or are there court interventions that are being pursued by the AG, as with other Chapter 9 institutions in the country, which, for instance, if ministries are ignoring certain recommendations, then they can be taken to the court of law. What are the intervention methods of the AG that are being pursued to ensure that the recommendations are being adhered to? Because it's a bit of a, disfiguring or a redundant process to always come in and year out and to deliver recommendations that are not being followed adequately. Another thing that I think I will appreciate from the presentation is that, you know, the affirmation of the fact that the NDOH keeps getting worse. It keeps regressing. The NDOH was better, in fact, not even better, but it has been so regressful that even the term ka Minister Joe Phahla is worse than the term of ministers of the former ministers William Khize. You know, but please just advise on the questions that I've asked about. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kaba.
Thanks, Chair, and greetings to members and colleagues also from department. Chair,
do you know what IPA stands for?
In support of Honorable Mnyai, but also to indicate, Chair, that I think members had posed their questions, but on any other wrongdoing or a matter which may not have been attended well, we would be happy to understand a corrective measure for improvement so that we are of the best. However, Chair, we raise our hands to be in support and welcoming the report, like as Honorable Mnyai had said. Chair, on the NHI, we may have yet what it is being presented, but it's important to understand we are in a very good process. And of us to also invoke or include other practices from other countries for building our own South African NHI perfect one, we are on course. So members need not to worry. We are attending to that matter sharply so, and it's gonna succeed. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable
Fekima. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you to the AG for your comprehensive report. And allow me also to congratulate and thank you on the work well done. It's one department that I think is working very effectively in Parliament. There's no doubt about that. Now, I think one of the questions I want, what are you identifying is the root cause of irregular expenditure? Is it because there is provision in the system of EFMA for irregular expenditure? Do you think it is as a result of that it gets exploited and people tend to go out there and irregularly spend money because it can be regularized? Like in the local government, you've got, what is it, Section 36B, I think, where you regularize irregular expenditure. Do you think having that as a provision is a good thing? Because it seems like it's being abused. That's the first thing. Now, the second thing is, I know there was a lot of concerns and complaints. I don't want to go into the nitty-gritty of what's happening in the Department of Health. We know the department is not performing well. There's no doubt about it. Now, when the minister and deputy minister come and brief us and tell us what to expect, it does not mean that it justifies what actually happened. The question that we need to ask it was measures are put in place to correct this. And I think some of my colleagues are correct, and we must be honest about this. Year in and year out, we get the same concerns, the same findings. Sometimes it's getting worse. Yes, there is some improvement, which we must welcome. But how long are we going to go on with this? What is the root causes of this? Do our people that are responsible for these things have the necessary capacity? Which brings me back to my next question. What is the explanation you are getting for vacancies? Now, you know, Chair, we have a very high vacancy rate, and we spend a lot of money through our financial aid and things like that at tertiary institutions and things. But every department has got vacancies, and I cannot seem to understand, what is it? Do we have the qualifications, but it's not worth the paper it's written on? What is really the problem that we're experiencing? Are you still getting threats? I'm told that you are getting a lot of threats because you're going in to investigate. Some of these, particularly local provincial governments and things, are giving you a hard time. Can you please explain? Now, not long ago, we amended and extended your powers. Is that powers that was extended to yielding any positive results? If not, what is it that you believe we should do so that we can work together and make people compliant in terms of it? And then lastly, I'll stop at this one. You know, is it possible, and I've asked this before, to get a list of repeat offenders who, despite the interventions, are not doing enough to correct what has happened before, so that we would have to look at alternatives in order to deal with this problem? I will stop there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for all of your discussion points and questions which you have raised. It is really an interesting presentation that has been done. Very interesting points which are raised by yourselves. So I'm going to just answer one point that was raised because I think it was raised and I have the answer to it. And then I want to also raise my points of concern and accolades where it should be done for the work that's done by the department and the entities. Firstly, we never invite the minister and the DG to these meetings. They receive the same presentations, maybe even a little bit different, directly from the AG's office on a different forum. And I need to correct that. This is for members of the Parliament of the Portfolio Committee, which to prepare us for the work that is coming in the week. And we must please be mindful of that when we raise certain points. And I know I sound like a broken record because I'm constantly trying to put us back into our position where we actually function and where we are. But I'm hoping you will take that very positively. The second one is to understand that this is a consolidated report of the outcomes of the sector, and it includes the NDOH and the 9 provincial departments, and that it also is intended to present an overall audit outcome on the predetermined objectives as set by and I must include the entities set by the department, the provincial departments, and the entities. So within the work that the AG, I think, has just done, is they've looked at all these matters which they duly consider in their audit, and they have presented what they had presented to us here today. And based on the presentations, there are obviously a number of things which we need to raise as a portfolio committee with the department, with the provincial departments of health, and with the entities, as these are presented by the Auditor General of South Africa. I want to just note a few, and many of you have raised many. And the one that I find that is really, really critical is, or two rather, is this thing called record keeping. Maintaining proper systems of record keeping is very vital in the medical and the health space. It does assist us in terms of medical legal claims to be able to review the records and get an understanding and analysis of what has really gone wrong with a particular case. But it should also inform us going forward as to what needs to be done to prevent those kind of cases, because we saw the whole presentation here of brain damage, cerebral palsies, etc. These poor kids who then have to are put in this position that they have to suffer with the consequences of negligence performed by whomever. It is not something that we should not talk about. And you would remember that it is one of the points that we have for a discussion where we're going to have a special portfolio committee meeting just on medical legal claims, and to see what it is that we must do as a portfolio committee in order for us to be able to maybe make recommendations or suggestions towards what can be done to improve this condition, because clearly this is very bad that so much of the money goes into paying for medical legal claims, and we're not able then to move forward in terms of the service delivery to all of the people of South Africa. Then the poor implementation of key infrastructure projects is something that is very serious. We need to look at the ICT control environment deficiencies, lack of risk assessments, ICT governance, adequate funding for ICT functions, etc. Because in the current times in which we live, it's a very easy system in which we will be able to control or manage and assess all of the functions of everybody else. And this is this thing called ICT. It's a very privileged situation that we are in. But then we need to fund it. We need to make it function. We need to analyze it. We need to correct where it needs to be done and maintain it also as we go along. And then the points of material non-compliance issues, irregular expenditure that has been raised, etc. So quite a number of issues, and I am raising it specifically because I'm hoping that putting emphasis on these few things would mean that we'd be able to get some answers on the issues which are raised. There should be a plan towards how to improve on these functions and how to erase these challenges which are mentioned. And there was also this point raised that some of these have been coming on for a while. It's repeated issues which are raised. At some stage, we should be able, as a country, as a sector, be able to address these things. I think it's very critical for us to do that. Then the other point that is very critical, I raised the one of the minister, is the fact that I raised earlier that we're in a set program. If we were not in set programs, it would be so easy to bring the departments, talk with them. Yes, and it sounds like we're actually not doing it, but we're given 1 week to call the department, all of the entities. We have to adopt a report in this week. These are the things which we do in the normal programs, and we need to find then extra time, which I am completely for, that we find extra time in order to do our work more more professionally, or attend to our work better than what we are doing currently. So, honorable members, I'm putting that back in your court also, that when you are called upon to give up your extra time then outside of our normal times, and be mindful that even when it's constituency period time, we've been reminded that we can have here and there meeting after 5 o'clock in the evening, but definitely not during the day. We have to also apply for those, and we must be given permission to do those. So all of you need to be available. If there are particular issues, and we have a long list of issues, and I personally don't even know how we are supposed to be attending to those issues when our program, we get these same programs, and we must comply within the timelines provided to us for those particular programs. Right now, in the programs of the BRRR process, we have to adopt our our report, if I'm correct, on the 21st of October. I can be corrected on that, that 21st, but that's where we are. But let me stop at that now and get the feedback from the AG, because we have very little time left now, 9 minutes left. We can possibly take another 4 minutes or so of your lunchtime, and then we start at 2 o'clock with NHLS if the feedback that we must get is a bit longer than that. Thank you very much. Mr. Andries, I wrote your surname again, Segetu. Sorry that I had to look up your surname. Tabelo and the others, you're very welcome to reply. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I must say we do appreciate the questions, and I must also say there are quite a number of them. So in the interest of time, we'll try and manage and respond to them as best as possible, given the time constraints, but also where we are not able to get to to respond to all the matters that may have been raised. Members are also welcome, with your permission and indulgence, Honorable Chair, to then note those unresponded to or unanswered questions. Or matters that would have been raised, and then through you, Honorable Chairperson, you're more than welcome to submit them, and then we'll see how best we then make sure that we then respond to those. So, I'll maybe start with some of the other comments made. I would honestly, Honorable Chairperson, support the approach that is being proposed by the Honorable Chairperson, in the sense that if you look at the plethora of issues and the many issues that we have to deal with, a more focused approach would really assist in this regard, in assigning specific time to a specific topic and dealing with that. So I do support the way in which Chairperson has tried to capture some of the things that we have tried to lift up, so that when the committee then embarks on its processes to hold the respective officials and individuals accountable as part of your oversight processes, that you are doing it focused on those areas that we would have wanted to highlight. And you summed it up, Honorable Chairperson, was with regard to the concerns around the record keeping, because if you think about it, and Tabelo tried to put a spin on it when she was presenting it, some of the medical legal claims, if you go back to that particular slide that we had put up on the as part of the presentation, I think about from the top of my head, about four or five of those cases, we noted that they were not supported by sufficient and appropriate audit evidence. So then it becomes difficult for the portfolio to then go and defend these cases in the event that the information is not available. Again, we are making we are drawing inference, because we are saying, how did you then go and defend yourself, or would you have been in a position to defend yourself or treat the case differently if you had sight to the supporting evidence? Because a lot of those would have, if you would have noticed, would have also been settled in that regard. So records keeping, quite key for us. And like I said, it's then linked to feed into your audit outcomes in terms of your performance information, where we can't even express a view on your performance as a sector in many of these departments, but also insofar as it then implicates the big topic, which would then be medical legal claims. So I almost want to say, when you then have that focused intervention, they almost go hand in hand, and therefore you'd require them to be packaged together, if I can call them that. And then also in the infrastructure projects, but I think the point I'm trying to make here is just the fact that we do support a focused a process in terms of choosing a particular topic or a focus area that we've highlighted and elevated, and then dealing with that. Chairperson, why do we support this? You'll see even in our own presentation, what we do when we look at the health sector as Office of the AG, we try and look at the strategic planning documents of the sector. We look at the core of what we're trying to achieve as a sector, but also what are some of those key issues that we would be grappling with, obviously within the domain and the mandate of the Office of the AG. And then what we then do is we devise a plan, and which I think for those members who have been around for a while, because I hear there are a number of them, we would always have the 5-year sector strategic plan, and then we would identify certain key focus areas that we would then go and spend our attention on for that particular year, then take a step back allow the departments what we call like almost a gap year for them to go and implement the recommendations, then focus our attention on something else, and then maybe do a follow-up in the subsequent years to see how our recommendations would have then been implemented. So certainly I do support that approach as well. If one has a number of issues that one needs to deal with, that a more focused approach would then assist. Then, Honorable Chair, there were also a number of comments that were made. And I'm going to try and talk to them conceptually, because they also do talk to what can we do, the recommendations process, what can we do differently, the consequence management processes, as well as how to deal with offenders. If I'm quoting unquote some of the comments that would have been made by the members, and that topic and conversation will also go hand in hand with the conversation around the irregular expenditure, the compliance aspect, as well as the material irregularities, because they all also, as with the previous topic, also feed into each other. So, Honorable Chair, the recommendations process. So if one takes a step back, members would recall that we made a number of recommendations over a number of years. Those were not being implemented. This is part of the accountability ecosystem, and is also part of enhancement of our powers through the amendments of the Public Audit Act. We then have this process where what we refer to as a material irregularity. So part of that process, Honorable Chairperson, we first, and Honorable Members, we first have to do the audit. So as we do the audit, execute the audit, do the normal checking, what they have reported in terms of our auditees, what they have reported, unpacking that, making sure it complies with the financial reporting frameworks, the auditees were compliant with the key legislation as and when they were, and also that they are reporting credibly, reliably, and accurately in terms of their performance. Part of that normal audit process, if we pick up a finding, and then we realize that, if you recall the presentation that was made by Tabiaro earlier on, where she spoke about the MI process and some of the criteria that needs to be met. If we identify a finding as part of the audit process that meets that criteria, then only does the MI process kick in, where we say, okay, we've given you sufficient opportunity as the accounting officer to maybe go and implement this, but we suspect there might be more to this, and we want to drive a different behavior and a different culture in the environment, then it triggers my process. So the MI process is then where we try and I want to call it drive a different culture in our respective portfolios. So we are hopeful that any report.
Is that from your side, Andries?
Yes, we can, Chair.
Yes, right. We can hear you, Chair.
All right, so that is from Andres' side. That is from Andres' side. If we lost him, Tabello, you're here.
Thank you, Chair. We all got cut off. The entire team got cut off. I just confirmed
right.
With
thing.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, Chair. So I was still talking about the material irregularity process, Chair. From our point of view, Chair, that is exactly what that process seeks to achieve. It's a change in culture, a change in driving the correct behaviors. And it's quite a legal process as well, because it is subject to review. So therefore, we have to make sure, like Tabiaro mentioned when she was doing a presentation, that we've covered all the bases, belt and braces, crossed the T's and dotted the I's. But you would have already seen when she was presenting, there were a number of material irregularities already raised and being followed up with the accounting officers in the health sector across the various provinces. So that information is there. So we are hopefully going to see, if I refer you back to that first slide, the very first slide that the colleagues would have presented the portfolio committee when they started the engagement, where we had the accountability ecosystem, you would have noted right at the center of that particular presentation was that continuum that talks about raising key insights so that we empower our oversight structures, our stakeholders, but also trying to help them to get to the right spaces where they do the right things at the right time for the right reason, thereby influencing them so that we can move in the right direction. But where that's not successful, then we go through the enforcement side, and all of it hopefully with the intention or with the objective of improving the lives of the citizen. So we hope that in the future we'll be able to see some benefits based on the material irregularities that would have been raised in the sector as a whole, Honorable Chair. Then, Honorable Chair, there was some specific questions as well. I'm going to maybe advise the committee in terms of other recommendations, in the sense that the challenge often, Honorable Chair, is you would have also, as a committee, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, received some submissions from the department and maybe various other role players that play a role in the sector. So once they've done the submission, they come to us, they ask as a portfolio committee, that would ask the portfolio committee for money, budget allocation, in order for them to go and achieve and deliver on certain commitments. That we approve the strategic plans and the budgets when we do the budget vote process. And then once that process has been finalized, the respective portfolios go and they go and implement and try and achieve these commitments that they would have made whilst they are spending the money that has been assigned to them through the budget vote process. So here's the thing, Chair. All these members or all these portfolios or stakeholders have come on a quarterly basis. They've been reporting to the portfolio committee. The office of the AG then gives you a set of findings, and the findings seem to then indicate the portfolio committee as well, because you would have been making certain decisions and taking certain courses of action and implementing certain action on the strength and on the basis of those submissions that would have been made. So it also becomes imperative that when those respective people and stakeholders come in and present to the portfolio committee, that we ask them what quality assurance processes the submissions have been subjected to. Have they been reviewed by internal audit? Have they been signed off by the respective governance structures, such as the audit committees? So that at least when you also take those pieces of information that have been submitted, you do have a sense of the quality it's been subjected to, so that you can then use it to support your decision-making process. Otherwise, the committee remains exposed. And I'm trying to also maybe throw it back a little bit to the portfolio committee when one of the members mentioned year in, year out, we get the same outcome, but year in, year out, we also still approve. We also still have the engagements with our respective stakeholders. They do come to us and present to us on a quarterly basis. So there might be value in us really interrogating the veracity and the rigor within which the quality of the reports have been compiled when we are dealing with them during the in-year monitoring processes. So there was also a little bit more of a direct question by one of the honorable members. Honorable Chair, yes, we do still have to manage our relationships and our stakeholders very well in terms of our audits that we do. We are mindful. So the threats have really reduced over the years. I think our stakeholders are realizing that it's not assigned to a particular individual. It's not Andries Segeto, I'm just doing my job, and by maybe dealing with me, you will not effectively deal with the process. And that's then usually indications and signs of a mature process that's able to stand on its own. And ideally, that's also what we want in our respective portfolios. When some of the members were talking about what needs to be done as well, is for the portfolios to really focus on preventative controls, on implementation of preventative controls. I think one of the honorable members also asked it in terms of the irregular expenditure, and it's been mentioned by other members as well. Irregular expenditure, the legislation is very clear, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. It says in Section 38 and Section 51 of the PFMA that the accounting officer or the accounting authority, being the board, shall implement sound systems of internal control. And part of those legal requirements also then requires the accounting officer or the accounting authority to implement processes and systems where they also prevent incurring irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditures. The law is very clear. But once you were not able to prevent, so your system had a deficiency or a weakness or a gap, and now you pick up, oh, I have an instance of non-compliance, the law then says, go and detect it. Once you've detected it, make sure you can fully disclose it, because once you fully disclose it, in the interest of transparency, because you'll be transparent, you can then follow and subject that particular instance of non-compliance through a proper process of investigation, so that you can do a proper root cause determination. Because the benefit of doing a proper root cause determination, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is it then assists you when you need to go and implement and improve your internal control, so that you prevent the recurrence, so you update your system so that you can prevent having future incurrence or recurrence of the weakness. but it also assists you that where there's maybe a behavior problem, that maybe you then are in a position to correct the behavior. And we all know that in order for you to correct behavior, there are certain ER processes that must also then be complied with. But if you've done a proper determination test, you almost have proper authority, and it makes that next step in the process a little bit more easier. And hence, Honorable Chair, one of the members also asked earlier on what the real root cause is. Is it the capacity issue? Is the training issue? You will never know as a portfolio if the accounting officers and the accounting authorities are not doing proper root cause determinations by doing proper investigations to determine what went wrong. So remember, we come in a limited period of time. We then elevate and we find some of these findings based on the work we would have done, because we've got a limited time period and we need to report to Parliament. But what we do is when we find certain clear-cut cases, we then escalate and highlight those to management for follow-up. But the onus, again, once again, it's clear in the PFMA, the accounting office and the accounting authority must go do those root cause determinations. But like I said, I tried to touch on some of the concepts. I do take my guidance as well in terms of, and appreciate the question that was raised, the very detailed set of specific questions on the NHI. Yes, indeed, the NHI formed part of the audit, but ours was to brief on the larger scope of the audit in terms of the financial statements, the compliance with laws and regulations, and the performance information. What we did find, though, is on the particular program and the target and indicator that we had selected for the NHI implementation being the predetermined objective management had set themselves out to achieve for the current year, we did raise some concerns on that particular target and indicator. We do appreciate that the NHI will become quite significant going forward, and we are certainly engaging with management in terms of that. Maybe also another point that I'll mention is any system will have its benefits and disadvantages, especially whether it's a centralized or a decentralized model. What will always be required is, whether you go decentralized or centralized, is for the system that management ultimately then chooses must be underpinned and supported by proper capacity, proper systems, and proper systems of internal control, but also have been properly considered by management, being the expert, subject matter experts in that particular field, knowing what they want to achieve in terms of the targets that they would want to achieve related to the strategic intent of the portfolio. Then, Honorable Chair, I'm quite mindful, like I said, I know you said 13:34, we are now at 13:37, so our time cut off at 13:40. So one maybe parting shot that I can leave the committee with, because some of the comments are also still talking to some of the what needs to be done and the non-compliance aspects. Honorable Chair, what I've also found works in a lot of portfolios, and I think I did mention it in passing during some of our early engagements as well, is some of our portfolios really, when they engage with the auditees that they are responsible to oversee, they will physically and literally ask them, give me a list as was requested by some of the members, by the departmental officials or from the departmental officials. Once they have the list of the transgressors or the consequence management processes, they will then want to see the detail. When did you start implementing your consequence management processes? So that's your first engagement when you deal with them. The second time when they come during the next engagement, you would then like to see some more tangible feedback or progress, feedback on the progress. So you can't be stuck where you were 3 months ago. And that's the only way in which you then hold your officials or the responsible people who must drive the correct behavior accountable. Because otherwise, if you leave it too long, they'll come at the end of the year and you'll get the same finding where we say those determination tests were not done, and therefore you didn't address the proper root cause, and you therefore didn't also update your or improve your systems of internal control, and you now run the risk of recurrence of the finding and the situation, and ultimately consequences have not been affected because the same individuals are still operating within your system. So I'm sort of throwing it a little bit back, but it's more saying we have reported, we have empowered those that are required to take action. It's up to them now to really take the baton forward and go and implement the requirements as per the legislation. Chair, it's 13:40. I think in the interest, I'll be guided by you of time. I will stop there. And then all the other things that we may not have gotten to, we are more than welcome to then get the submission and then respond to them. There were some specific questions like the underspending and the facilities. Maybe just to conclude, We would not have touched all. You know, Chairperson, the audit does not do the entire financial statements. We do samples. So if we are highlighting five facilities to you, we are just highlighting those facilities that would have formed part of our sample. There may be a plethora of other facilities out there, but we are just saying we're picking up a trend. Again, it's for those charged with oversight and those that have the responsibility bestowed upon them by the PFMA to then go and take our insights and see how they best deal with them so that they can influence the environment. I'll take my guidance from you, Che, in terms of how we proceed further, given the time constraints. Thanks, Che.
Thank you very much. And I would assume that your samples you take will be random samples just for the committee members. I'm sure you're not going to select the worst or the best. And then do not forget, Andres, Secretary, to on the report requested by Honorable Sheikh Imam, a more detailed report that the members, and I'm not certain exactly which report it was, but there's so many issues which are raised that I think we probably can do with a lot more information from your side. And then also just on the what I mentioned earlier about the adoption of the report, Honorable Members, I've looked at the dates, the 19th, which is next week, and on the 21st, just for your own knowledge. And then lastly, the AG's office, you've done a great job. We appreciate you coming. I would not be able to give you more time because we do have another engagement at 1400 hours, but you're very welcome to send some written replies to the committee secretary if there's anything that you thought you had not been able to address. And maybe I must just give you a last minute to or 30 seconds to give a closing remark, and then we'll go and lunch, honorable members, for 15 minutes.
Thank you, honorable chairperson. No, indeed, Honorable Chairperson, we do appreciate the engagement and the committee's robust and rigorous questions. So from our point of view, we do remain committed to assisting and supporting the oversight structure, such as the portfolio committees and yourselves, to drive the right culture and behavior and to hopefully then drive and assist our portfolios to then achieve the strategic intent and ultimately for the betterment of our citizens. Within the health space, I think focus just on the medical legal claims and making sure that we have proper controls and systems over the limited budgets that have been assigned to us. And then also in conclusion, just making sure that from a consequence management point of view, that maybe we engage a little bit more often. I think then we would be covered. Thanks, Honorable.
Right. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we're on lunch now. And I'm really sorry, we'll only have those 18 minutes. We will start promptly at 2 o'clock. Thank you. Do not switch off your devices, please. Honorable First Sergeant, your hands raised. You have 10 seconds.
No, I said it's fine, Chair. Thanks. I support you.
Thanks.